This is full-time Catholic radio for Southeast Michigan, 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
And welcome back to this second hour of Cresta in the Afternoon. I'm Matthew Bunsen, filling in for Al. I am executive editor for EWTN News and also Washington Bureau Chief for EWTN News. Happy to fill in for Al, especially today, to talk about a saint who has been much targeted, much maligned, and somebody who has really been the subject, I think, of some really terrible campaigns in recent years. I am referring to Saint Junipero Serra. This is especially timely because we have seen over the last days protesters tear down statues of Saint Junipero in San Francisco, and that they're trying to do it literally all over the place. What are we to make of this? Well, I think the sentiment was best expressed by Archbishop Salvatore Crudiglione of San Francisco, who, writing on the destruction of St. Junipero Serra, said, "What is happening to our society? A renewed national movement to heal memories and correct the injustices of racism and police brutality in our country has been hijacked by some into a movement of violence, looting, and vandalism. The toppling and defacing of statues in Golden Gate Park, including that of St. Junipero Serra, have become the latest example. The memorialization of historic figures merits an honest and fair discussion as to how and to whom such honor should be given. But here, there was no such rational discussion. It was mob rule, a troubling phenomenon that seems to be repeating itself throughout the country. It's a fair question, but we also need to ask the question, who is Saint Junipero Serra? Is there any truth to the accusations being hurled against him? And what can we do as Catholics to respond to that?" And I'm going to be talking with Jim Graves, a writer, about that. And then we're also going to be talking with Julia Dinn, who is a writer who has worked for 5 newspapers, the author of several books. So she was on the show last week talking about Seattle's so-called Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone, or CHOP. It seems to be on the verge of breaking up after a shooting this last weekend. But what exactly is the situation there, and how, in a way, does it connect to the questions of Junipero Serra, the tearing down of statues, and civil and political unrest in the country? All of that in this hour. But first, here's the news with Dan McGraw.
Thank you, Matthew, and good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Tuesday, June 23rd. It's the Feast of St. Joseph Cafasso. And today's news is brought to you by Charity Mobile, supporting pro-life and Catholic causes at CharityMobile.com. President Trump is issuing a warning to those who try to damage or take down a statue or monument. Speaking to reporters outside the White House, he promised tough action against the people he called vandals, hoodlums, and agitators. Trump just landed in Yuma, Arizona, where he'll participate in a roundtable discussion on border security and immigration. He will also visit the border to mark 200 miles of construction on his massive border wall. The Catholic bishops of California are defending St. Junipero Serra, whose statues have recently been torn down. Father Serra was an 18th century Franciscan missionary who founded California's chain of Spanish Catholic missions. The missions have been criticized for enslaving Native Americans. The bishop said yesterday that St. Junipero was ahead of his time in defending the rights of indigenous people. They said those who tore down the saint's statues in Los Angeles and San Francisco failed the test of history. More on this story later in the program. A presidential debate is being moved to South Florida. President Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden will take the stage for a televised debate in Miami in the fall. The event was scheduled for October 15th at the University of Michigan, but the university is withdrawing from hosting due to coronavirus concerns. And the Pennsylvania Supreme Court is accepting Bill Cosby's appeal of his 2018 sex crime conviction. The 82-year-old is serving a 3-to-10-year prison sentence after a jury found him guilty of drugging and raping a woman at his house in 2004. In the appeal, the court plans to review whether the trial judge's decision to allow other accusers to testify against uncharged acts against Cosby was prejudicial. With your Ave Maria Radio News, I'm Dan McGraw.
As I mentioned in the introduction today, a statue of St. Junipero Serra was torn down in San Francisco's Golden Gate Park on June 20th, along with statues of Francis Scott Key and President Ulysses S. Grant. The statue of Miguel de Cervantes, the author of Don Quixote, was also defaced. And the scene of it was captured on video and was a searing one for anyone who watched it. There have been a number of responses to the vandalism, to the destruction, and it has raised anew questions about who exactly St. Junipero Serra was and is, and why there is such hostility, outright hatred, toward a man, a saint, who is honored as the Apostle of California. To learn more about St. Junipero Serra, I have the great pleasure of being joined by Jim Graves, who has written extensively on Serra. He also writes from Newport Beach. He served as a docent at Mission San Juan Capistrano, the seventh of Father Serra's missions. Jim, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, it was inevitable, I suppose, that as the wave of violence against statues picked up pace across the United States, that someone like St. Junipero, who has been the target for a lot of people for some time, would himself eventually sort of get into their sights. Having seen the video, though, I'd love to get your reaction when you saw it.
Well, first of all, as a citizen and as a Californian, I see it as utter hooliganism. If you don't like a statue in your neighborhood, there's a legal process you can go through to get it removed. To get a mob and put chains or wires around and haul it down is absolutely outrageous and should be stopped everywhere. I don't care if you think the person is awful. So that's as a citizen. As a Roman Catholic, what was Junipero Serra holding up? It was the cross of Christ. It was hauled down, and the mob cheered. Some people looked like they had sticks or clubs and came over and hit it, kicked it, defaced it. So on both counts, as a citizen and a Catholic, I think it's outrageous.
And the thing that was also somewhat striking about this was the fact that it just wasn't Serra. It was also Francis Scott Key and Ulysses S. Grant. But the rage seemed especially focused on Serra and has also sparked sort of a wave of additional protests and efforts to remove him from other locations, not just in California, but there have been some for a while who have wanted to remove the statue from the Rotunda, I think, in the Capitol, in U.S. Capitol. Is that right?
That's what I've heard as well, yes.
So this then strikes a lot of people as not just removing a statue, but trying to rewrite history. And it's important in a moment or circumstances like these to understand what exactly we're talking about in terms of history and the role that Serra had in not just California history, but American history. So what's the most important thing to start with that we need to know about Junipero Serra?
Well, when I was a docent at Mission San Juan Capistrano, I actually worked there part-time, and I was a docent, and I led a lot of tours. If you had the opportunity, and there weren't a lot of other tours going on, you would start at our Junipero Serra statue, and you'd tell the story of Junipero Serra. He was a Spanish missionary. He was born and raised in an island called Mallorca, which is just off the coast of Spain, and it was a Spanish possession at that time. At a young age, he went into the seminary and became a priest. Very intellectual guy, very accomplished. But in his 30s, he had a burning desire to be a missionary. Okay, so he was a little old for missionary. Typically, you'd send the guys out in their 20s. He was in his 30s. He came to what we called the New World and spent a number of years in Mexico as a missionary. And then at 56, which was quite old at that time, people didn't live that long,
exactly.
He started to evangelize my state of California, 1769, starting in San Diego. He was Padre Presidente of the mission system. And the idea was of the Spanish Franciscans was to build the missions about a day's walk apart up the coast of California. As you mentioned in the introduction, he lived to see the first nine founded, of which the Capistrano mission was number seven. The purpose, the Spanish fortunately wrote a tremendous amount of material that we have. If you read about Junipero Serra, his primary purpose of coming here and being a missionary was to introduce the people that were already here, what we call the natives or the Indians, to the Catholic faith. He thought it was an absolute imperative that they came to know Christ, accept him, and become practicing Catholics. Additionally, there were some material benefits as well. I don't want to offend anybody, but the condition of most of the Indian tribes in California at that time would be considered quite primitive. We had a tribe here in Southern California called the Ahashiman, which they renamed the Juaninos after San Juan. and they lived in basically what we teach us, which is a hut made of sticks that you'd live there for 2 weeks. You'd eat roots or seeds or rodents. Maybe you'd get fortunate and catch a deer. And you'd be moving constantly chasing a food supply. And if you were sick and injured, there wasn't a lot they could do for you because the tribe had to keep moving. They'd have to leave you on the side of the road and you'd move on. When the Spanish came, they established settlements. Ours here in Orange County, where I live, is San Juan Capistrano. And they build a church, they build farmlands, they bring in livestock. And Sarah and his padres had the idea they were bringing a better and a superior life to the Indians that were here. Spiritually, first and foremost, they were being introduced to the Catholic faith, and secondarily, the material benefits. We didn't have a lot of trees at that time, so they used adobe mud buildings, farmland, trades like weaving and making wine and so forth, livestock farming and so forth. And it was introducing the Indians to a more modern style of life.
So from the standpoint of the revisionists, those who are critics of Sarah, they say that the missions themselves essentially exterminated the Native American life in California, and that there were terrible abuses taking place. What's the real record of this? And I want to come back to what exactly Sarah did in that regard. But can you paint a better idea of sort of the wider context of how the missions worked and what they were actually trying to accomplish?
Absolutely. It's funny. The modern-day anarchist predating him was the anti-Catholic Protestant from the 1800s that established the so-called Black Legends of the Mission. The padres were cruel to people. They forced them to stay at the mission. They enslaved them. I heard a fellow interviewed when they pulled the statue of it said, tied them into police brutality today. These are people that are largely ignorant of history. They're bringing a very modern, agitated political point of view and impressing it on historical events that's largely inaccurate. I'll give you the best argument of why what they're saying is silly. And it's heyday in the early 1800s. The Capistrano mission had two padres, somewhere between 6 and 8 Spanish soldiers with very primitive weapons, and 1,500 Indians living there. How in the world could they possibly persecute, enslave, and mistreat such a large body of people? By and large, the Indians were at the missions because they wanted to be there. They had accepted the faith, they accepted the modern Spanish way of life, and they wanted to be there. Now, there are some nuances I would make. When an Indian accepted baptism, he became a neophyte and he was baptized. At that point, he was expected to stay and live and work at the mission. You couldn't take off and go do your own thing because you were separating yourself from the sacraments, the community. You were essentially leaving the faith that you were baptized into. Then they would bring the Indian back and make him stay at the mission because the padres saw it as they were responsible for the soul of that Indian. And when he had lived there for many years and had decided to accept the way of life, he was expected to remain. Sarah, there's absolutely no official documentation to show that he abused the Indians in any way. In fact, he was their great champion. One of the biggest problems the padres had were with the handful of Spanish soldiers that were here. If you came to California, you were essentially at that time coming for life. You couldn't hop on a plane and fly back home in 12 hours. You're basically staying here for life. So some of the men that they got to be the soldiers were of the lower classes, maybe from the prisons and things like that. And you had individual incidences where you could have a soldier abuse an individual Indian. The Spanish, particularly with Sarah, were very protective of the Indians. At one point, he walked all the way back to Mexico City to get a Bill of Rights in place for the Indians that were living here in California. When he died, they had to put a guard by his body because the Indian people wanted to take pieces of his clothing or his hair or whatever because he was viewed as a saint. So, no, there's no official record of him abusing any Indians. Quite the opposite. He was the champion of the Indians, was beloved by them, and was viewed as a saint by them.
So how do we end up where we are today with this type of historical revisionism and this sort of ideological lens that people are bringing to the question of Sarah and the missions?
I think it is of a broader picture of younger people that are largely ignorant of American history, in our case of California history, and are actually introduced to a version of history that makes this country and Western civilization seem bad, something to be hated, to be exterminated, to be gotten rid of. I think any serious review of history, you'd realize this country, quite the opposite, has the greatest freedoms and prosperities man has ever enjoyed. Now, we're made up of human beings, and wherever you have a lot of human beings, there's always plenty of sin. Your allergy.
Yes.
In many ways, this country has overcome many of its sins and has really become the place, along with Western Europe, where people want to come to. They're not waiting in line to go to North Korea or, you know, running many of the Middle Eastern countries to come in here. And I think it is because we have the remnants of Western Christian civilization. So I think a lot of it is the education. I think when we turn our institutions over to people who are secular, more of the leftist persuasion, mm-hmm. after a few generations, this is what you get. You get young people going out in the streets, seeing a statue.
Let's pick that up on the other side of the break. And we're going to continue this conversation about St. Junipero Serra here on Cresta in the Afternoon. I'm Matthew Bunsen, filling in for Al today.
Is it time to refresh your office or workspace? Office Express believes in supporting the people who bring your business to life and in helping you efficiently reach your goals. They do this by providing creative workplace solutions and tools. They're everything office, including office supplies, furniture, and printed products. Stop by their state-of-the-art furniture showroom or call 877-795-2600 to begin your journey to a more efficient business. This message is sponsored by Office Express OEX, a proud supporter of local Catholic charities.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 15 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile. Everyday living. Effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
If you believe in the power of prayer, Ave Maria Radio invites you to look at their website to submit a prayer request at AveMariaRadio.net. Your prayer requests are shared with hundreds at the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, the Servants of God's Love, the Monastery of the Blessed Sacrament Cloistered Nuns, the Family of Faith Apostolate, and the staff of Ave Maria Radio. Just go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the Community tab to submit your prayer request today.
This is Dr. Stan Williams. Why do Christians believe what they do? Not what, but why? What are the facts, evidences, and reasons for the Christian faith? Nineveh's Crossing has just released a new book titled Basic Christianity, Facts, Evidences, Reasons. It's a religious education course for teens through adults in Christian history, archaeology, and logic. Basic Christianity, available now at AveMariaRadio.net in the bookstore. Look for me, Dr. Stan Williams.
Food for the Journey, Sister Ann Shield.
The book of Sirach, chapter 15, verses 15 to 20. If you choose, you can keep the commandments. They will save you. Before man are life and death, good and evil, whichever he chooses shall be given him. Immense is the wisdom of the Lord. No one does he command to act unjustly. To none does he give license to sin. It's we who decide to turn away. It's we who choose sin over virtue. God never coerces. If he did, it would not be love. He offers. He keeps offering himself. We have free choice. We have a free will. What do we choose? You have to make certain decisions. What decisions are you making? See, don't just drift. Make some decisions. Is my life in accord with the gospel? Am I living out my faith? If someone were to judge me today, would they find me guilty of being a Christian? Would it be evident who I am and to whom I belong?
Sister Ann Shields gives you food for the journey, weekday mornings at 6:45 and again at 11:30 on 990 Ave Maria Radio.
Myler & Zipka Certified Public Accountants is proud to support Ave Maria Radio programming. Myler & Zipka offer great services to WDEO listeners in Metro Detroit for all of your accounting and tax needs. Call Ken Zipka and let him know you appreciate him helping to keep Catholic Radio alive in this area. Ken can be reached at 734-930-5500. That's 734-930-5500 or on the web at mspccpa.com.
Back to Crits in the Afternoon. I'm Matthew Bunsen, filling in for Al. Continuing my conversation with writer Jim Graves, who's something of an expert on St. Junipero Serra, who has become once again a lightning rod for controversy and outright hatred for his heroic work establishing the church, not just in California, but in the United States. The founding of the first nine of California's missions. He was a saint, and he was a defender of the Native Americans. So the question is, how did we get to this point where his statue, as we saw this last week, was torn down in San Francisco, and there are calls for removing his statues from almost everywhere else they might be found? To talk about this, Jim Graves. Let's pick up where we left off, Jim. And we were talking about the impact of the missions in California. But let's also look at sort of the wider impact of those missions as well, not just on the Native Americans, but I mean in the formation of California as we know it today. I'm referring, of course, to El Camino Real.
Well, some of the things I point out about Father Serra, I think an honest studying of his life, I think people would realize what an actually heroic figure he was. He was a humble man, but he was also a driven man in the positive sense of the word. He had a certain number of years on this planet, and he was going to do what he could do to spread the faith that he had been given as a child. And El Camino Real is the King's Highway, which would be the road that would link up the various missions up the state of California. Some things about Serra I would point out. When he first got to the New World, he was bitten by some sort of a critter. I've heard it described as a bug, and I've heard it described as a snake. Something bit him that created an injury in his leg that made him hobble for the rest of his life, to some extent that at times he was not able to walk. He would have it treated, then he would get up and be able to walk again. He was often at odds with the Spanish authorities. He'd request permission, for example, to found a mission. He wouldn't get it. He'd go ahead and do it. And then he'd go back and argue his case and explain why it was a good thing that he did. He was a very driven man in the positive sense of the word. His motto was siempre adelante, always forward. Had there not been a Junipero Serra, California's history could very well have been very different. You had the Russians coming down from the north, the British coming around with ships, the Americans coming eventually. Instead of having a Spanish tradition in California, we could have had a British tradition or some other tradition. It's interesting, if you look at the cities in this part of the country versus on the East Coast, many of them are named for Catholic saints or something other, Catholic. San Diego, you know, which is St. James. Los Angeles, the city of Our Lady of the Angels, Sacramento, Blessed Sacrament, San Francisco, San Luis Obispo. They named these cities often after Franciscan saints. So the character and the culture of California could have been very different without a Junipero Serra. So I would say certainly as a Catholic, we can appreciate the fact that he brought the faith here to California where I happen to live and grow up. But even if you were a non-religious person, he made a major impact on the history of California, and he's somebody very much we want to honor in a secular setting, like a state house, you know, or up at our Capitol or San Francisco or Los Angeles in the public squares. So, unfortunately, there's a lot of ignorance about Sarah. There's a lot of prejudice that's been cultivated towards him and the Spanish and towards Western civilization. I'm reminded of the parable of the weed and the wheats, where the master says an enemy has done this. I think there's definitely an enemy that has poisoned people's minds toward Christianity, towards Western civilization, towards mm-hmm. people like Sarah. That I, you know, it's just going to take the grace of God and, you know, an effort to present the positive side of the missions and the and Father Sarah that hopefully will take root in people again.
Yeah, and let's talk a bit more about His Holiness, because I think people really need to appreciate that this man truly was a saint.
Absolutely, absolutely. He was an exemplary man. As I said, a very humble man, a man totally focused on doing God's will in his life. He just thought it was an imperative to go out and preach the gospel to people. Overcame a lot of difficulty. I mean, you're talking 1770s California. You didn't have a modern freeway system back then. You know, you were hiking either on some sort of a burro train up the up on land, or you could take a ship, and, you know, when it was a particularly safe time to sail. And he wanted to found mission after mission after mission. The Spanish authority would say, hey, no, don't do that. We can't give you the protection you need. But still, he was driven. These are people that didn't know Christ. They needed to hear the gospel. He took the time to get to know the people, try to, I think the ultimate goal, of course, would be to get them to speak Spanish and be citizens of New Spain. But when he first encountered them, he tried to learn the language, their customs and beliefs and so forth. And the padres, for the most part, who went with him did as well. I mean, you're talking about human beings, so you probably had some more exemplary, devout, pious-driven padres like Sarah, and you probably had some more lax ones and everywhere in between. But I think if you study the history, I think you realize it's a very positive thing that he did. Fortunately, many of the missions are well-preserved. And when you come to California, the Capistrano mission is as good as any of them. You can see the buildings. You can see the artwork. You can see statues. We don't tear them down at the mission. Other places, there's less. Some of the missions have quite a bit more of the original buildings. Others have less. So may I make a point about the Indians that they encountered?
Certainly.
Sure. You got to remember, it's true the Spanish were conquistadores, and they knew how to fight, and they knew how to be tough, and they were conquerors, unquestionably. But you got to consider the people they were often encountering. The Aztecs were an empire who were very abusive to their people and to the neighboring tribes. If you go to Mexico City, I go online and look, they have a wall of skulls of the human sacrifice victims. The number in the thousands that they would offer to their gods. The Incas, I was reading an article about some of the human sacrifice victims they'd found that were really well preserved at the top of the Andes. The Spanish, with all their faults, they were still Christians. They still had a conscience, and they would come and see the behavior of certain tribes like the Aztecs, and they were horrified. And the reason that you had a few hundred conquistadores defeat a nation of millions is that the other tribes who were so abused by the Aztec Empire and the Incas were happy to help them defeat these empires. So you don't want to have the mentality that they're these benevolent, loving Indians and these mean Spanish came in and abused them. There was plenty of sin on both sides. And in fact, at the missions, I can give you examples of when the Indians killed the Padres. There was a brief uprising at the San Diego mission, and one of the Padres was killed by a group of Indians, and another group came up and defended the Padres, and that was put down. So you have to really understand the history, the time, the mentality, and you can get a fairer picture And I think you'll walk away with a more positive attitude toward the Spanish mission system and what the Spanish did here in California.
So basically, none of the nuance and clarity and fact that seems to be being disseminated at the moment, especially among those who are ideologically driven to tear down statues and try to erase the memory of the California missions.
That's correct. That's correct. I can give you some other examples. Like, for example, disease. It's true there are a lot of diseases the Indians had not been exposed to that the Spanish brought, and there was a lot of sickness and a lot of death. But can you blame the Spanish for that? At that time, disease was not well understood. It was certainly nothing they did intentionally. I mean, I would point out that the bubonic plague that decimated Europe centuries ago was brought over from Asia. Is it the fault of the people living in Asia? No, it's just that's just the consequence of moving around. You bring diseases with you. And at that time, as I say, disease was not well understood. Another thing I hear is about the beatings of the Indians that they were whipped. True, there were corporal punishment was used at the mission, but you got to remember that was very commonplace a few hundred years ago, and the Spanish whipped each other. So it's just a different time and a different place and a different perspective. I think the Spanish would look at our time and be horrified to see many of the things that we're doing. You know, I don't want to give you specific examples, but it's just a different way of looking at things. It is true California was colonized by the Spanish. But I would say that the benefits that were brought by the Spanish, particularly the Catholic faith, but also a modern society, were more positive than the negatives by far.
Mm-hmm. You did a piece in 2019 for the National Catholic Register called St. Junipero Serra is a Great American Hero. And in it, you interview and reference a number of experts on Serra, including Christina Foss, the museum director of the old mission in Santa Barbara.
Santa Barbara, yeah.
Yes. Who, as you note, is the teacher of Native American studies for 40 years and is a descendant also of some of the Native Americans. And I thought that this, I would encourage everyone to go to ncregister.com to read this piece because her thoughts on this as a Native American were really very striking. But there's something that she said in here that you recorded, that as a Native person, she went with some negative attitudes about Serra and the missions, but came home from Mallorca, where he was born, with a different take than I thought I would. And then she talks about he thought a community could not be achieved in Europe. The one that he was going for was a perfect Christian community. Talk about that, because I think this is an important point to keep bringing up.
Well, we go in with biases. All of us are raised with biases. Somebody in her situation can read the extensive literature that's available or go to different places and come to a broader perspective and a better understanding of the customs and the culture of the times and the minds, try to get into the mindset of the men and what they were trying to do and what they brought over. I mean, I can give you other examples. I think in that same article I interviewed Andy Galvin, who's up at the Dolores Mission. He's of a similar Native background. He was no fan of the mission system, but he very much was a fan of Serra and conceded that he was a saint.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there, unfortunately. Jim Graves, thank you. I encourage everyone to keep reading about the real history of Junipero Serra. And this is a country that's not going away. When we come back, I talk about the Seattle protests and everything that's happening there. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
This show is underwritten in part by the following nonprofit company.
Emmaus Health and Arbor Woman Health invite you to join us at a virtual gala on June 25th at 6:30 in the evening. Learn how a Catholic approach to healthcare can save lives and how you can help Arbor Woman Health make a difference in the lives of women. Join us on Thursday, June 25th. Go to flourish.cbo.io for details. That's flourish.cbo.io. You won't be disappointed.
Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization, Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property?
Real Estate for Life can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 80% of the referral check to Ave Maria Radio and Students for Life. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
I'm Dr. Stan Williams. Contemplate the universe with me.
And so God looked at everything he had made and found it very good.
I suppose that includes what some biologists call junk DNA, what cosmologists call dark matter, what physicists suggest are hidden dimensions, or how time can distort space and gravity twist light. Atheists claim that science has the answers to everything. But in fact, as humans, when it comes to most of the universe, we have no idea. In our wisdom, we call the ubiquitous junk, dark, hidden, distorted, and twisted. Can the mysteries of the universe be all those things and still be very good? Impossible? We have no idea. But God knows, and one day you will too. At AveMariaRadio.net, under Resources, explore the universe with me. I'm Dr. Stan Williams.
Hi, this is Father John Ricardo, inviting you to join me as we explore some of the deepest questions that arise in our hearts, questions that shape the way we think, the way we speak, and the way we live. For all of these questions, Christ is the answer.
Our individual and corporate relationships with the Lord, our relationship to the church, the precepts of the church, our relationships with the world and the culture that surrounds us. Father Ricardo discusses these things and more, all from a Catholic perspective on Christ is the answer. Listen to Christ is the Answer, Wednesday evenings at 8, Saturday evenings at 6, and Sunday mornings at 11 on 990 WDEO, 1440 WMAX, and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet.
Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. He is the image of the invisible God. He points us to our destiny. He reveals the dignity of the human person. He is the one who makes known the Father. Christ is the Answer.
Howdy folks, this is Jimmy Akin from Catholic Answers Live. The COVID-19 situation has affected us all, including your local Catholic radio station. We need your help to make sure this vital missionary work continues, and no gift is too small. Together, we can make a difference. Please make a donation to support the work of this station today. Thank you, and God bless you.
To help, go to AveMariaRadio.net. This Ave Maria program is brought to you in part by the nonprofit CMF Curo. Your search for affordable health care stops here. Since 2014, CMF Curo has provided Catholics with affordable health care sharing that goes beyond insurance. With programs that cost less than many COBRA and ACA-sponsored plans, CMF Curo is a Catholic health sharing experience that enables you to live fully alive while saving money. Call 1-833-GET-CURO to find affordable Catholic health care now. That's 1-833-GET-CURO.
Last week, Julia Dean visited Crest in the Afternoon to talk about Seattle's so-called Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone, essentially a zone that had seceded from the United States and declared itself as well sort of a religion-free zone. It was supposed to be a haven, similar, I think, to Occupy Wall Street. We have seen similar efforts elsewhere in the United States, for example, in Washington, D.C., where I'm reporting now. There is a creation or a desire to create the Black House Autonomous Zone that included as well the desecration and vandalization of St. John's Episcopal Church, which is one of the major landmarks in D.C., right across from the White House. What is the latest on Seattle? What can we expect in the coming days? And what are the ramifications for the wider protests in the United States? To talk about that, I'm very happy to be joined again by Julia Dean, who has spent time in the zone. Julia, welcome.
Thank you.
So just to bring us up to speed, I know that the story has been moving rather quickly the last couple of days. What's the latest from Seattle?
Well, you know, the mayor is now making noises about that they want to bring the police back into the area. Remember, there was a police precinct building that got taken over by the protesters, and the city ordered the police to vacate the building against the wishes of the police. So now you've got this building there on this main street that is basically not in use. So if the police have to respond to anything in that area, then what happens is, it takes them forever to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And so the residents are complaining. There's been some shootings. There was at least one person has died. Another person's in critical condition at one of the local emergency rooms. So it's finally dawning on city officials that this bohemian experiment is not going to end well unless they do something.
Right. Well, let's go back a little bit then. How did all of this get started? Because there seemed to be this emergence of this Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone, and we keep seeing the name or hearing the name Chaz. Who is that person, and how did this actually come to be in the first place?
Well, it was called Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone. That's when they came up with Chaz. Then they changed it to Capitol Hill Organized Protest, and it was the idea was it would be some sort of, it was supposed to be where all the Black Lives Matter people could kind of, you know, put up sculptures and graffiti and stuff that they wanted. They would run kind of, they felt like the police, it was kind of like a grab of six blocks of city property and apartments and private domains that they said they could run it better than the police could. Well, not really. In fact, just in today's Seattle Times, looks like there's another shooting. Sorry. That was at 5 a.m. Pacific time today. So, obviously, it might have been a good idea to start out with, well, sort of a good idea depending on how you look at it, but it's just gotten to the point where all the criminal elements have moved in. Capitol Hill is known for its large homeless population. And you know, the homeless are all over there. Well, why not? They're handing out free food.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then it's actually not a bad place to, to go in during the day. You see, all sorts of, there's like, again, the free food stuff. There's certain places you can sit down and talk with people. There's a place we can light a candle to victim, black police victims, black people who've been killed by police, that is. But during the night, it goes crazy. You don't want to be there because apparently all the bad stuff moves in, and that's when the violence is going on.
So the mayor, Jenny Durkin, seemed to be very supportive of this zone for a number of weeks. Obviously, that's changing now. What's the sentiment from the rest of Seattle, and certainly what's the sentiment of the police department there?
Well, the police want to come back. The police chief was saying yesterday they need to be back there. The police chief has always said we were taken out of there against our will. In other words, so it was the mayor who ordered them out. The mayor, I think there's a lot of feeling like the mayor doesn't really know what she's doing. And the person who is over that section of the city is a socialist city council member who, from what I can tell, I don't live in that area, but, she wants a socialist state. So, she seems kind of like a nut job. I really feel for the people in that area because they're just like, kind of no one's running the ship, and it just seems like here's the city that's sort of adrift. I know President Trump threatened to send in, National Guard there at one point, but I think wiser heads have just said, hey, just let it go, man. If you send people in there, it's going to look like a takeover. Just let this thing, let them stew in their own juices. Well, they are, because people are getting shot. And, there's all sorts of stuff going on.
Well,
two men wounded, one man killed. It's just gunfire on successive nights. Hello?
And a large number, a number of sexual assaults, that sort of thing. Is that
right?
Yeah,
the police chief said there had been at least one rape. So, but it's kind of hard. Like, again, you have to call through the Seattle Times, which seems to be doing a pretty good job of tracking what's going on. I mean, when you're in this place, you don't exactly want to advertise you're a journalist. So you kind of go in kind of urban style. You carry everything in pockets on interior vests, so you don't have a purse that anybody can snatch. And, I mean, they're doing a pretty good job of covering it. But it's just like no one quite knows. You know, it's been, as this is going on, close to 3 weeks. And I think all the people who wanted to visit it, kind of wanted the Summer of Love, Hyde Ashbury. It's no longer Hyde Ashbury, you know. It's getting steep.
So if you're somebody who lives in the six blocks of the area on Capitol Hill, and you live there, you own a business there, say you have a restaurant there, what have the last few weeks been like for you?
Let's see. Well, the private residents are just saying that it's hard to even get there. There's it's extremely noisy at night. I mean, there's loudspeakers, there's raves, for instance, you don't even want to go out at night, so you're basically imprisoned in your home. If you want to call police, they're saying that response times are three times what they were, because the police have to travel all the way across the city to get to you. Because the whole east side, the police presence on the east side is shut down. They're having to come from zones several miles away, which, you know, Seattle's a large city. I mean, it takes a while to get there, and especially ambulance, fire, whatever. So it's essentially lawless. You're on your own. And I think right now the police are coming in. There's more of a presence. But when they came in the other night, when someone was shot and killed, this huge mob went after them. And there's a video of protesters screaming and running after police. So what the ambulance people are saying is, like, we're not coming in until the place is secured. So they stand on the outskirts of this zone and wait for the wounded, the dead, or whatever to be brought to them. In fact, there's been actually some kind of wheeled medical gurneys that have been brought in and left with some volunteer medics, whoever they are. It's never known quite who these volunteer medics are, but I guess there's some folks actually there. Mm-hmm. And so someone, you know, if there's bodies, they're brought out. So that means being wheeled at least a block or so, or two, depending on where the fire medics are waiting for you. But you can imagine, if you're a gunshot victim, you know, someone's having to push you through a couple blocks worth of streets. That not good. And one person, you know, sometimes some people, I think with the first person who was shot, it was like private people were just putting them in their cars and taking them to Harborview, which is like the nearest emergency room. So it's just nuts over there. And I think city residents are saying, you know, cute idea at first, you know, fun. We had TV cameras in there, people coming from around the world. But this is not fun anymore, and people are dying.
But couldn't this have been predicted pretty easily, that this situation, if anyone has any memory of Occupy Wall Street, this is a similar sort of utopia that deteriorated almost within the hour into social unrest and chaos. So why is everyone once again astonished at this?
You know, I just don't think people read history. They just, they think, oh, it's, you know, it's June, it's warm, it's Seattle, everyone's going to be nonviolent. You know, I did a follow-up piece on the clergy who are actually that man a table in Seattle, and in the CHOP district. Mm-hmm. And one of them, it's interesting, there's a couple of rabbis, there's Unitarians, there's a bunch of them. And one of the rabbis said, look, you need to interview some of the black activists who feel like this is just kind of this weird white protected area that they want nothing to do with. So sure enough, I called down to one woman who was she is an activist, and she was like, she says, you know, none of the blacks want anything to do with this. They think this is just, it's completely stupid. First of all, most of, you know, Capitol Hill has a 2% black population. So she says it's mainly white people up there. And she says, look, it was black. If it was a totally black crowd occupying this, there'd be a completely different police response. But because it's white, you know, it's being allowed to just be there. But she says, you know, we want the precinct open. She told me we want that protection. We fought to get that precinct there years ago because we were, you know, when there's crime, we weren't getting the protection, and now it's closed. So, you know, we've got robbers or rapists or whatever outside our door, you know, they have to come in from the central or the western parts of the city, which is, you know, 20, 30, 40 minutes. Well, what good is that going to do?
Mm-hmm. Well, and you wrote a piece for Get Religion on that the Seattle's depoliced Chaz District is a religion-free zone, even in the mainstream press.
Right. Yeah. Definitely. And that's where I was complaining that no one was covering the religious aspects of it. So then I went... Fortunately, the Seattle Times had this photo of a clergyman standing there, and I went and tracked him down and found a whole bunch of others who are actually out there, you know, I guess, ministering to the protesters. Mainly, they told me they're being, like, soundboards, and that it's usually people who feel traumatized, triggered, whatever, by the fact that they were tear gassed. But again, the black activist I talked to, she says, oh, give me a break, you know. Oh, they were tear gassed. I mean, really? You know, so you've got this kind of white narrative, and then you've got the whole black narrative. Anyway, a lot of black activists want nothing to do with CHOP. It's not their, you know, they're busy in other parts of the city. They don't even feel it's a real Black Lives Matter thing anymore.
And is this also indicative sort of the wider culture that we're seeing now in the Pacific Northwest? It'll have to be a very brief answer.
I'm sorry? It is. I mean, it's pretty...
Understood.
Yeah, it's pretty free culture, I must say.
Understood. Julia Dean, thank you so much. Be safe out there. When we come back, I have a few final thoughts on Junipero Serra and our current situation. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
You don't think it'll happen to you twice. First, it was a fire. My agent was right there and helped me rebuild. Then the tornado destroyed everything again. Both times, my independent agent and auto owners took care of me like someone takes care of family.
For whatever lies ahead, we're always there. Auto Owners Insurance.
For your no-obligation quote, please call Choice Insurance at 734-641-4200.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popcha.
How can parents raise faithful kids in a faithless world? A 50-year study of over 3,500 people found that the degree of parental warmth kids experience in religious households was the single biggest factor in determining whether children would become faithful adults. As I summarize in my book, Discovering God Together, The Catholic Guide to Raising Faithful Kids, children are most likely to become faithful adults when they've experienced the faith as the source of the warmth in their homes. The same study found that rates of faith retention in kids skyrocketed when religious dads took point on practices that contributed to a warm, faithful household. Things like generous affection, maintaining strong family rituals, and gentle approaches to discipline. God created parents to give kids a physical sign of His love. The more warmth our kids experience in our presence, the more warmly they'll feel to the God who loves them through us. I'm Dr. Greg Popcheck, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically own shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Well, as always, my thanks to the wonderful staff here at Crest in the Afternoon. It is a privilege to be here covering for Al. They make it easy, and it is a joy. As I always say, I can fill in for Al, but I could never possibly replace him. As we finish up this hour in the conversation about Junipero Serra, the Seattle protests, the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone, and the violence that has sparked across the country, I want to read just a little bit of Archbishop Cordiglione's piece on the destruction of St. Junipero Serra's statue in San Francisco. As he says, St. Serra made heroic sacrifices to protect the indigenous people of California from their Spanish conquerors, especially the soldiers. Even with his infirmed leg, which caused him such pain, he walked all the way to Mexico City to obtain special faculties of governance from the viceroy in order to discipline the military who were abusing the Indians. Those are very important facts for us. Then he walked back to California. This man was a saint. Let's not forget that. Thanks so much. Until next time. God bless.
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMaria Radio.net. To listen to this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, visit the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Or to order a CD of the program, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.